Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
All right, the most important midterm election in your lifetime, 91 days away. Are you ready? You know, it's honestly all in your hands. I know we've got a special election. It's going on in Ohio today. If you're in and around the Columbus area, I could tell you right now that, you know, this is a historically Republican seat. But you never know on a special election day, and this is one of them. And the only way you win these races is you see the importance, you take the time, and you get out and vote. And that would be in Ohio for Troy Balderson. And his opponent is a typical, you know, left-wing Democrat, you know, everything that the people of Ohio don't like. It's not any more complicated than that. And there's going to be about 50 to 60 races that in the course of the next 90 days we will be informing you about. But if you happen to be in that district today and you're registered to vote, I hope you'll go out and vote, because this is going to be, we know what they want. We don't know what their agenda is in terms of making life better for the American, you know, forgotten men and women that make this country great every day, that get up, work hard, shovel coffee down their throats. They get their kids ready for school. They pack their lunches or take a few bucks out of their pocket for lunch, get their kids off to the bus stop or to drive them to school. They put in their 10, 12, 14 hours a day. They go home. They help with homework. They cook dinner. You know, maybe hamburger helper tonight, maybe pasta, maybe chicken, maybe pork chops. I don't know, whatever people like to eat. And then that's it. And then you go off and you spend your days and you pay your taxes, you work hard, you play by the rules, you obey the laws. And now all of a sudden we've had the best economy in 10 years. I love what Reagan said when he was running for re-election. Stay the course. We know what we were left with after 8 years of Obama. We know that millions of jobs have been created. We know the jobs that were never coming back, manufacturing jobs, are back, and they're back in a huge way, which is great for working men and women. They were told they're never coming back, ever. You know, it is to me, at the end of the day, one of the more frustrating things when I see, you know, that the Democrats have no plan whatsoever. You know, we'll give you, you know, we know we have 14 states with record low unemployment, African Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, and our military. There is a Bloomberg article today, and I thought this was huge news. I'm sure you're never going to hear about it from the fake news media because they're just busy every second, every minute, every hour, every day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. You know, obsessing on hating the president. But this, for the Democrats, this is their do-over. They want a do-over here. They think that we made a mistake. They think that this was a fluke. They think that, oh, we can't let... The thing that scares them the most is all the success the president is having, because that is a direct threat to what they love and desire the most in life: power. They love being called congressman and senator, governor. They just seem to love it. They eat it up. They're not going to serve. I mean, that is a service job. You're supposed to serve the people in your district or the people in your state. And you're supposed to keep the promises you made. I'll give you an experiment. You want to try an experiment about what it means to people about promises? Let's say you tell your kids, oh, if you get straight A's, I'm going to take you to Disney. All right? And they start in September or August, depending where you live, and they're all gung-ho, and they end up the year with straight A's. And I'm sure you talked about it throughout the year, and you get to the end of the year, straight A's on the report card. And then your son, your daughter, your kids, you say to you, all right, we're going to Disney. When are we going? And you say, well, you know, we'll push it off to next year. Good luck with that. It's not going to work out well for you. And it's going to disappoint the people. Think about that, the level of disappointment. How many times have we been disappointed with all of these politicians? Say what you will about Donald Trump, he keeps his promises. He keeps them. And you know what? I like people that keep their promises. And it make and you know what? It's working for the country. Now, I gave you those other economic statistics, and the Trump administration has another all-time economic record today. And this one could explain why the latest Rasmussen survey from Friday last week showed that African-American support for the president, which was at 8%, is now at 29%. In other words, it was at 8% on Election Day 2016. Well, why has that changed? Well, okay, we'll take out the margin of error. All right, 24%? That's three times what he had. Why? Because people are the manufacturing jobs are coming back. We have millions of people, and I would argue during the Obama years, and the facts bear this out when you break things down demographically, the people that were disproportionately hurt the most in this country were minorities. And we had what? It's not a joke when I said 13 million more Americans on food stamps and 8 million more in poverty. Try to explain every day during the 2016 election, real people, real lives, real suffering, needless suffering. You know, there's a chance we could have more prosperity in this country than we ever dreamed of. I mean it. I mean, when you look at now what we've discovered with all the energy resources we have more potential for every American, every one of us, to achieve beyond the American dream. A really nice house, really nice neighborhood, really nice car, truck, or whatever the heck you like to drive. I don't know. I'm not into cars that much. And you know what? Send your kids to good schools. Take the vacation yearly, maybe twice a year. Go out to dinner, not have to worry about it. You know, well, I can't afford to go out to dinner, you know, this month because I got to pay the electric bill. Anyway, Bloomberg News, you know, if you hear the media tell it, Donald Trump isn't, you know, one that might expect, you know, oh, he would never do this. You know, the media is already doing what I told you they would do. Republicans are racist, sexist, misogynistic, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic. They want dirty air, water. They want children to die, and they want to throw granny over the cliff. Same thing every 2-4 years. Under the president's watch, just explain what's been happening in the labor market. In the 3 months through July, the employment to population ratio, I'm looking at, this is Bloomberg, one particular demographic jumped off the page to me. Black Americans, African Americans, have averaged 58.3%. That is just, again, demographically, they're the ones that broke down the demographic. That is just 2.3 percentage points lower than white Americans. Let me explain it another way. That is the smallest employment gap ever since 1972. Now, you have to ask if minorities were disproportionately negatively impacted by Obama's socialist policies. You know, I love the guy Marcus Miletus from Daily Kos, who's the founder. You better not be afraid to say you're a socialist. Okay. We see the Democratic Party's going hard left. Republicans are weak and spineless and kind of lacking courage and backbone and vision, but you know, kind of Trump is forcing them even beyond their own understanding to do the right thing. But anyway, why is this happening? And why have I always been a conservatism works? I was explaining this to somebody, never Trumper guy, and I get along with them, but all these never Trumper people, what they really don't like is the president's personality. They don't like he's a fighter. They don't like that he takes on the media. They don't like that he tweets. They don't like that he's never going to be the establishment stiff president in years gone by. But you know who does like him? He's real. You know who likes him? I like him. You know who else likes him? Police love him. Military loves him. Firemen love him. you know, nurses, doctors, the working men and women in this country love him. Because he's fighting to get those jobs that Obama said would never come back. And he's keeping his promises. He's like the parent that says, you get straight A's, I'll take you to Disney. And he's keeping his promises on Iran. He's keeping his promises on Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. He's keeping his promises, you know, literally fighting day in and day out to cut taxes and burdensome regulation. And I was saying to this friend of mine, tell me what part, except for trade, I put trade aside, and I would argue trade, the president never wants, never wanted, never would be engaged in probably a trade war, but you have to at least threaten it if you want to negotiate a better trade deal. And I just know him so well from going back years before he ever ran for president. It would be, Mr. Trump, I'd like to interview you. Okay, how long? I really need 30 minutes. All right, I'll give you 10. 25, and I can do it. I'll give you 15. So we'll agree on 18, and I'll keep them till 22 so I get a half hour in, if I'm looking for the half hour. He negotiates everything. He negotiates the lighting, for crying out loud. I mean, he understands every detail. And that's what he's doing on trade. That's why you look at these numbers, and I so resent this massive lie about conservatives. Look at, he's been conservative on judges. He doesn't want to legislate from the bench. He believes in co-equal branches of government. He believes in separation of powers. The left, what they could never get done at the ballot box legislate, they want to legislate from the bench. He's like Reagan, a conservative. Cut taxes, Reagan, a conservative. End regulation, Reagan, a conservative. You know, Reagan said, if you don't have borders, you don't have a country. He wants a border wall with a door. He believes in peace through strength. Little rocket man, fire and fury. My button's bigger than yours and works. Evil empire, tear down this wall. You know, Jerusalem, the capital, he's not afraid to take a stand. And that's why the American people love him. What is the left offering you beyond what I tell you? Their hatred of Trump, Rush made a really good point about that. We played on TV last night. Hatred of Trump. They want to impeach him, but they won't even say it now because they know it's literally not going to go over well. They want to keep open borders, eliminate ICE, keep Obamacare, and those tax cuts that they were screaming were just crumbs. Interesting how desperate they want their crumbs back. If it's only crumbs, why do they want it back? This is what this is about. There's a lot in play in Ohio today and in the rest of the country in November, 91 days. All right, 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. We've got breaking news about Bruce Ohr and Christopher Steele and Page and Strzok, and it now has gone literally to a much higher level than we ever knew and connected to Christopher Steele was so in it after they found that he was a liar, leaker, and fired him. And Bruce Ohr's meetings with Steele are unbelievable. We'll give you the details. All right, as we roll along, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. I got to tell you, if you're this whole Manafort trial to me is fascinating and it's interesting and it's also a sad saga in a lot of ways because Judge Ellis was right from the get-go. The government doesn't care about his 2005 tax case. It had already been investigated, put in mothballs, and they only were dragging this out to put the screws to him so he'll sing or compose. And then he'll use the information, Mueller, to prosecute or to impeach Donald Trump. This judge, Ellis, he looked at Rod Rosenstein's mandate, and it was so wide open that a case that had nothing to do with Russia, nothing, Russia won't even be mentioned in this case, that had is a tax case, had nothing to do with the campaign, nothing to do with Donald Trump, nothing to do with the election. And this guy has, after the judge reads the mandate from Rod Rosenstein, because Jeff Sessions recuses himself, now it's the trial of the century. And they're now literally At this point, they are trying to do everything they can do to save this case. This judge is not putting up with any of their crap. And this is Mueller's team. Now, I don't know. I think ultimately it's going to be decided on bank accounts and money and whatever else they drudge up from 2005. Everybody should pay their taxes. I pay more than my fair share. I get it. But I got to tell you, for this guy to say, this isn't about being rich isn't a crime. Move on. And then he goes, an oligarch. Oh, you're saying a big bad word to make him, to demonize him. I'm not having it. It got so fascinating, the judge lashing out at Mueller's lead prosecutor and bringing Mueller's prosecutors to tears. I'll explain when we get back. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. Glad you're with us. It's the Sean Hannity Show. All right, 25 till the top of the hour. Back to the Manafort trial, day six now. Well, President Trump's name got mentioned, and apparently... one-time campaign chairman in a trial, Alexandria, tax fraud. Prosecutors are alleging he failed to pay taxes. Okay, this is going back to 2005 to 2007 from some Ukrainian political party and then lied to get loans when he needed more money. That's what the case is. Some of the only direct references, they had to get the president's name in somehow in his campaign. Say, oh, he worked for Trump. That was the whole purpose, hoping that some of the jurors hate Trump like the news media does. Anyway, it just occurred where Rick Gates testified that Manafort resigned as the campaign chairman in August, but he continued to work for the campaign. And Robert Mueller's guy, lead prosecutor Greg Andres, showed Gates emails from Manafort, which showed that Gates' former boss requested that Gates use his position in the Trump campaign to offer a series of favors to Stephen Calk, founder, CEO of a bank, one of the banks that extended Manafort a loan in 2016. That is unreal. The idea that if you do business with somebody and you say, maybe you become friends with the guy. Now, I can get you tickets. By the way, you know how many tickets to the inauguration? Millions. You know how hard they are to get? Not at all. You know, I got tickets for people that I took care of myself and I paid full disclosure. You know. But the reality is, I actually had people come watch the TV show. I was doing the TV show from one of the balls, whatever you call those things. I said, well, you want to come? Come with me. Come hang out with me, my friends. Oh, okay. I'm a bad person. And I just brought them in with my crew, like I always do. Oh, man. Anyway, 2016. Why? Because they're my friends and I wanted them to watch my TV show. I think we had 10 people in the studio last night on TV. We have four people here in the radio studios. We invite people all the time. You know, I feel like I'm a performer. You know, here it is. I'm like this is like the circus because they're watching, looking at me. Gates claimed that Manafort asked whether his former business partner would do him a favor, write a letter claiming that Gates was responsible for purchasing. I don't know what that's all about. But this is what's going on. 2005 to 2007 tax case. Let me give you some of the details. I think my favorite part of the story, though, is, again, no collusion, nothing about Russia, nothing to do with his time in the Trump campaign, nothing to do with the election. Nothing to do with Russian influence in the election at all. It's about 2005. Now, the judge that is overseeing this trial, Judge Ellis III, and I really think that he saw this for what it was. He looked for the mandate. Unfortunately for him, the Rosenstein mandate was very, very broad. And sadly, being very, very broad, that means that he had no choice. But because they brought charges and he's a judge that follows the law, he's doing it. But he's also letting the prosecutors know they have zero. He has zero patience for their BS and he sees through what this is. Now, I don't know where this is going to end up, but that's not even the point. Putting the screws to somebody so that they'll sing or compose so you can get to the president. Now we have some breaking news that's just unfolding and I don't want to get ahead of my skis here. And Jim Jordan and John Solomon will join us at the top of the hour. They're putting this investigation. I've got enough to know that Bruce Orr is up to his eyeballs in his relationship with Christopher Steele. And I know that it's far deeper than we ever expected. But we'll get to that. We'll have the full story certainly by 9 o'clock tonight. So anyway, the judge, Ellis III, T.S. Ellis III, overseeing the trial, tore in again to Mueller's prosecution team, like 5 days in a row now, questioning the merits of the entire case and complaining that a disrespectful gesture by the lead prosecutor was, quote, BS. After jurors were dismissed Monday, too bad they didn't see this in the Manafort trial, the judge and prosecutors trying the case got into an extended verbal debate lasting about 10 minutes over the merits of the prosecution, the length of the case, and even the eye contact of the prosecutor, Greg Andres, who is in this particular case, that's Mueller's, you know, hitman. It's really, if you don't want to know who's in charge of all this is Weissman. You know, Weissman, the guys that withheld exculpatory evidence, you know, that guy. Yeah, hired by Mueller. He's the guy that lost in the Supreme Court 9-0. He's the guy that cost tens of thousands of our fellow citizens their job with Anderson Accounting. He's the guy that put four Merrill executives in jail for a year, and that got overturned by the Fifth Circuit. Anyway, so they get into this for a good 10 minutes, the judge specifically pushing Andres on why the prosecution was moving slowly with Rick Gates. And what matters are the allegations that he made money from them and didn't report it, Ellis said. You don't need to throw mud at these people. Now, remember, the same judge saying, you stop using the term oligarch. And then he went on to say even further, well, in this society, we can look at Soros and the Koch brothers as oligarchs. Rich billionaires, blah, blah, blah. And stop talking about what he owns. That's not the heart of the case. You're trying to create the rich versus poor narrative. It's always the... Look, this the Democrats have perfected this identity politics of men versus women, rich versus poor, old versus young, you know, along racial lines. Every election season, we see it. Anyway, I don't know if they're good or bad. I don't care, Ellis argued, reiterating his previous claim that the prosecution seemed to be focusing not on the actual charges, but on what he considered to be political contributions. They want this jury to know he's rich, he's a Republican, and he worked for Trump. Guilty. That's what they're trying to do here. If the case was strong enough, they wouldn't need to do any of this, but that's what they're doing. And they're really, these are not political contributions. They are self-serving payments with respect to what oligarchs do. That makes it even clearer to me that it doesn't have anything to do with the allegations, the judge said. It throws dirt on these people. They may deserve it. I don't know, and I don't care. Most heated moment, however, took place when Ellis got perturbed by Andres, Mueller's guy, not looking up at him when he's speaking. Look at me. Don't look down, the judge demanded. And when Andres responded that he was looking at a relevant document, then it even got testier. You look down as if to say that's BS. I'm up here, the judge said. You know, this goes to the heart of, I want to hear from the FISA judges. Judges, I've said this before, you better say your honor. You know, you want to be stupid, piss off a judge. They've got all the power. And you know what? These judges rightfully demand respect in their courtrooms. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, your honor. No, your honor. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. And if you don't answer that way, good luck to you. Because they can make it, you know, really hard. Anyway, then it gets even better. This is great. You know, I understand how frustrated you are, the judge said. In fact, there's tears in your eyes right now. Ouch! And when the prosecutor protested that he didn't have tears in his eyes, the judge shot back, well, they're really watery. It was great. Mueller's guy was tearing up, apparently. You know, all of this is entertaining in a way, but it's really not, is it? Look at what our country's going through. A witch hunt. Look at the dual standard of justice. Two-tier justice system. Hillary's got her system. Deep state got their system. Where is the prosecution of Hillary? I cannot give Hannity, why she lost? Because if we don't have equal justice, if we don't have equal application of our laws, we don't have a constitution. That's why it matters. That's why all of this matters. And if you're going to criminalize political differences, you're going to overlook the, you know, the fact foreign intel services hacked into her server, that it's illegal to put top secret classified information on. It's illegal. Read Greg Jarrett's book. He named six specific people that did far less than Hillary, charged and put in jail. Six pictures of a submarine, Christian Saucier. You know, that's one example. And if we don't have equal justice under the law, we're going to lose the country. If you can criminalize political differences and stomp on the Constitution and shred it and go after people, and then after you rig the investigation with an exoneration written before an investigation or even interviewing the main people, which Comey instructed, and you got people at the FBI say, you know, we'll stop him. We've got an insurance policy. He's loathsome, blah, 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 and everything else they're involved in. And then they turn their sights after they give her a pass. You think you'll get away in a court of law? You think you will get away with deleting subpoenaed emails and bleach bitting your hard drive and erasing everything so nobody can forensically find it? And you think you'll get away with busting up your phones and devices and pulling out your SIM cards that are under subpoena? You think you'd get away with that? Nobody would. She did. Where's her indictment? She had it fixed, rigged. Then of course, the dirty dossier. You got Adam Schiff on tape. Giddy. We got him on. Oh, he's talking to a Russian. You got dirty pictures of Donald Trump? Did Putin see them? Can I get them, please? Isn't that collusion? Based on what we've been hearing for the last year and a half? Isn't that some type of coordination, collaboration, a conspiracy, whatever you want to call it? And then, of course, lying to judges, which is where I started. Really? How do those FISA court judges know they were purposefully misled with phony information, debunked information that guys like Yates and Mueller, Gates and Comey and, you know, deputy, you know, whoever else, Rod Rosenstein, they all signed off on it. Anyway, more happened today. He's been cracking the whip, meaning the judge in this particular case, and in a series of clashes, Ellis snapped at, you know, Andrus, and, you know, and Andrus sometimes lashed back at the judge. Let's get to the heart of the matter. Don't speak when I'm speaking. If the jurors defer to the judge, they may view the prosecution as being out of line and overly aggressive. This was in the Politico. It's a very risky strategy. And you know what? I don't know what's going to happen, but it's, you know, 95% of these cases in federal court end up in guilty pleas. It's stacked against the defendant. You know, it just is. But that's where we are. That's where our country is. I don't know why the president doesn't override Rosenstein and declassify the 20 pages. What's very interesting, we're going to play this in the next hour. Devin Nunes was on with me last night. The FBI failed to include exculpatory evidence in the Carter Page FISAs. And we've got the proof. Well, that sounds typical. Sounds like Andrew Weissman. Robert Mueller's, you know, team of Democratic donors. By the way, if any of you think I like the fact that there's a few FBI bad apples, or as Joe DeGeneva says, bad cops or corrupt cops, I don't. I don't like it at all. And I know the rank and file don't like it either. And that's not them. And they'd never do it. And they know what has been done here is corrupt because they tell me. All of them, almost universally, they're disgusted with what's happened. But it's not them. It was taken right out of their hands in the field offices and put right up at the top. Orr is going to be a big part of this story. Bruce Orr is bigger than we thought. We're going to explain that at the top of the next hour. 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. We've got a lot more ground to cover. We also have John Solomon and Jim Jordan. They're going to break this story wide open when we get back about Bruce Orr. We got a big election going on today in Ohio we're watching. David Schoen, Greg Jarrett also coming up, and House Majority Whip Steve Scalise. Talk about horrible rhetoric. Well, we'll remind people of what all the things, the horrible things the Democrats have done and said. See what they did to poor Candace Owens and Charlie Kirk? That was an assault. They were on TV with me last night. One other thing, a friend of mine as a lawyer was just writing me. We got a lot coming up at the next hour. Jim Jordan and John Solomon breaking a story. But, you know, there are many sort of chapters as it relates to cross-examination, you know, just of Gates. You know, there's some like 20 meetings, I believe, with prosecutors. And literally, there's got to be so many changing of stories as it relates to Gates. We already know he's a liar. We know the star witness is a liar, an embezzler, a criminal, a tax cheat by his own admission. How come he gets to testify and gets a get out of jail free card and the other guy is at risk of going to jail? That sound like justice? That sound like the right way to run a justice system? Well, you killed 19 people, Sammy the Bull, but you get to go free, testify against him, and we'll buy you a house and set you up in Arizona. Uh-huh. I'll say whatever you want. I'm already a murderer.
How great is he? How great is he? How great is he? Hey, come here, Jim. Come here.
Thank you. The president's a little taller than me. Thank you. Think about this. In 18 months, regulations reduced, taxes lowered, Gorsuch on the court, the economy growing at a record rate, unemployment at its lowest in 20 years, Kavanaugh's on deck on the court, we're out of that crazy Iran deal, the embassy is going to Jerusalem, and the hostages have been returned from North Korea. That's what's happened under the president's leadership. Thank you very much.
What a great defender he's been. What courage. I'll tell you what, there's a brave, tough cookie along with some of his friends.
All right, that was the president as he was campaigning. Big race going on today in Ohio outside of Columbus. And this is the Troy Balderson race for Congress. The president was out there campaigning. That was on Saturday night. He introduced Jim Jordan, and obviously the crowd went absolutely insane. And Congressman Jim Jordan joins us now along with our friend John Solomon, who has a huge breaking news story. Mr. Speaker, oh, I'm sorry, you're running for Speaker.
We sure are. It was a great event, Sean. The president knocked it out of the park. There were thousands of people turned away. The air conditioning wasn't working, and yet people stayed there for hours to hear the president talk. And it was. And I think, look, it's tight in this race. It is really tight. But I think if Troy wins, it's going to be because the president put him over the top and came in. But it's tight. I think he's going to win. But it's a tight race. And the president, like I said, was just tremendous Saturday night. The people loved it.
You know, it's really important. Look, I think that this race, the Democrats have nothing to offer. Except, they want to impeach Trump, but they just have stopped saying it. So it's basically a big lie to the American people and a manipulative lie, number one. Number two, they want their crumbs back. Amazing. They call it crumbs, the tax cuts, a couple of $1,000s for a family, and they call it crumbs, but they want them back. They want to keep Obamacare, which has worked out so well for millions and millions of Americans. And then on top of all of that, they want open borders, eliminating ICE, and they want all the investigations into how corrupt some of the highest levels of the FBI and the DOJ have been in terms of an effort coordinated to destroy Donald Trump.
Yep, no, exactly right. They want to raise your taxes. They want to abolish ICE and not secure the border. They want to socialize medicine. They want to impeach the president. And if they get power, do you think it's been tough for us to get documents from the FBI and the DOJ right now? That we won't get squat from them if they're in power. So that's what's at stake in this election versus, again, what the president has accomplished in 18 months. I mean, it is truly phenomenal. I see the markets up today, the economy growing at a record rate, unemployment at its lowest, the embassy injured, all those things we rattled off at on Saturday night. that is an amazing year and a half, but that's what's at stake. And part of that's going to happen in this election today. So let's hopefully hope that Troy Balderson can win this thing.
All right, let me go to John Solomon of The Hill. He has a lot of breaking news. The extent of coordination between Bruce, Nellie, Orr, and even connections to special counsel Robert Mueller. And what's worse is this goes far deeper than we ever knew, Page and Strzok as well. John, tell us what you've been able to find out when you got emails and information to corroborate all this.
Yes, thank God for the Justice Department emails and text messages, because it seems like the entire Russia case was carried out by text message and email. It's an amazing thing. So Congress, Congressman Jordan and his committee and many others are beginning to get a series of documents that are going to continue to flow for several days to Congress and to some of the other oversight bodies. But they show unequivocally that Bruce Orr, a deputy to Obama Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates, the woman who signed the first FISA warrant on the Trump campaign, had extensive contact with the two Democratic opposition researchers who were being paid by Hillary Clinton by the Democratic Party to defeat Donald Trump with the Russia allegations. And that is Glenn Simpson at Fusion GPS and his British intelligence operative, Christopher Steele. These contacts started early in 2016. In the critical days just before the FBI opened up its probe on Trump-Russia, the contacts increased. And then after Steele's fired by the FBI, because he's a snitch that went bad, he violated the rules, he's fired by the FBI, or becomes a critical conduit of information who continues to feed the FBI information from Steele, even though he's been terminated as an unreliable confidential source. So what you see, these emails, more than even the Stroke and Page email, show for sure that the Hillary Clinton campaign, the DNC, and their actors, their agents, were really working hand in foot with the Justice Department, the FBI, the intelligence community, to further what has been still an unproven narrative, the unproven narrative of collusion. There's some great quotes in here. You can see.
I want you to explain it, though. I mean, you can read them and explain them to people, because I want everybody to understand what we're really talking about here is not only was there, you know, the dossier bought and paid for, Russian lies, right, now debunked. It was disseminated to manipulate and misinform the American people to basically steal an election. That's bad enough. Politicians lie. But then it's used as the bulk of information, according to the Nunes and the Grassley-Graham memos, to obtain a FISA warrant on an opposition party candidate in an election year so that they can spy on that campaign. And then Nellie Orr is working for Fusion GPS that got the Perkins Coie funneled money from the DNC and Hillary Clinton to pay a foreign national, Christopher Steele, who himself in an interrogatory said, this is raw intelligence, we haven't verified it. But you're telling me it goes way beyond that Christopher Steele and Bruce Orr and others have contacted each other how many times, and they want to give this what they know is false information to Robert Mueller.
I can't yet confirm the Mueller angle. That's something we're looking at, but I can confirm that Orr was feeding information to the FBI on behalf of Steele after Steele was fired. These are in the early days of the Trump presidency when Steele was worried that the whole investigation was going to collapse. And so Orr becomes this conduit to feed the FBI information. Meanwhile, he has a conflict of interest. His wife, financially a beneficiary of the Fusion GPS project, she's got this ethical entanglement with Orr, but the FBI is using him. They're still getting information from Steele, who they fired for violating source rules. And you're looking over the course of 2016 and 2017, it looks, I'm still counting these up because I'm in the reporting process, looks like four dozen contacts in 2016 and 2017 between Steele, Simpson, and Orr. I mean, this is extensive. These
are Steele, Simpson of Fusion GPS, Bruce Orr, whose wife was partly responsible for putting the phony Russian dossier together for Fusion GPS, right? Well, how do you interpret this? How should the American people interpret that?
I think this is the clearest evidence to date, even more than the Stroke and Page emails, that the FBI's Counterintelligence Division and the Justice Department's National Security Division were duped into becoming political opposition researchers for Hillary Clinton and the Democratic National Committee. They allowed Christopher Steele, Bruce Orr, and Glenn Simpson to manipulate the intelligence processes to put a lot of unverified information into the intelligence community and then leak it to the news media in an effort to smear Trump to try to defeat him in the election, and then when they couldn't defeat him in the election, to smear him in the opening days of his presidency. I'm going to read you one quote from a text message. It's an extraordinary text message. It's January 31st, 2017, 11 days after President Trump took office. It's the day that Trump fired Sally Yates. That's Bruce Orr's boss. She was fired for insubordination. She refused an order. He fired her. Christopher Steele writes from London, B, meaning Bruce, doubtless a sad and crazy day for you regarding Sally Yates. Just want to check with you that you are okay, still in the SITU. That's a short synonym for an intelligence community, and able to help locally as discussed, along with your bureau colleagues. Keep in mind, at this point, Steele's been fired 3 months before. He's not supposed to have any contact with the FBI. Here is Steele and Orr consorting on how they're going to continue to get Trump information to the FBI, to the intelligence community, even after he's been terminated for cause. It's an extraordinary admission of the documents, and we now know, because of Senator Grassley's work, because of Congressman Jordan, that the FBI had 7 interviews where they treated Orr like he was an asset, a source, and they treat or they interview him about what Steele's telling him, even though they've already fired Steele. They're not supposed to be using any of Steele's information. It really shows how this whole process was corrupted.
Let me bring Jim Jordan. Jim, I mean, honestly, you've been fighting for this information, these materials, everything in between. And, you know, it's a slow, slow bleed. It's like, and it gets worse every time. And this now puts it on another level. Explain your thoughts and your interpretation.
Three quick. John's been great. You've been great on this, digging and working hard. But three things. Remember, it was just 3 weeks ago that Peter Strzok admitted in the hearing we had that the FBI, in fact, was getting the dossier from Bruce Orr, who we know was now getting it from Chris Steele and getting it from his wife, Nellie, who worked for Fusion. Second, when you read these emails, It's Glenn, it's Bruce, it's Nellie, it's Chris. It's like these were all best buddies. It's all first name. So to John's point, the number of times they were in touch with each other, they were like friends. They were all working together on this project of putting this dossier together that was, you know, disproven. And finally, the big takeaway for me is we got to get Bruce Orr and Nellie Orr in for a deposition as soon as possible. Bruce Orr is now the key to this, in my judgment. I think John is exactly right. He's the guy that we need to sit down and talk with. We need to figure out what he said what took place in these meetings with Christopher Steele, because a lot of these emails.
But Chris, but wait a minute. But we got to add some other components to this, because remember, when President Trump was coming in office, now we're post dating this that Orr and Steele are still involved. Remember, it's unverified and salacious, according to Comey's telling Trump in January of 2017 before he takes the oath of office. But yet it was Comey who signed off on the first FISA warrant in October 2016. And yet, meanwhile, we now know that not only was Christopher Steele being paid by the DNC and Hillary, but now also by the FBI, and then was fired by the FBI, but the FBI still used it, even though he was a liar and a leaker, they still used it as the basis to get the FISA warrant against Donald Trump's associate in that particular case. But now, how much did the FBI pay this guy?
Yeah, they continued to use the guy's information, Chris Steele's information, after they had fired him. They just routed it through Bruce and Nellie Orr. That is a key takeaway here. I mean, they go to the court. They don't tell the court who paid for the dossier, namely the Clinton campaign. They don't tell the court that the guy who wrote the darn thing had been terminated, but they kept using. And then when they did tell the court he'd been terminated, they kept using his information. It was just being routed through Bruce Orr and Nellie Orr. That is a big, big problem and is not supposed to work that way in this country, but it did.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back more with Jim Jordan, more with John Solomon coming up on the other side. As we continue with as we continue with Congressman Jim Jordan and the Hill's John Solomon, all right, what else are we going to learn about this Jim Jordan, and what do you see on the horizon?
Well, let me just read one of these emails to you, Sean, to talk about the kind of relationship they had. And this is from July 30th, which I think is significant because it's the day before the Russian investigation into President Trump is launched. So on July 30th, Christopher Steele writes to Bruce Orr and he says, "Great to see you and Nellie this morning, Bruce." They met in Washington, D.C. "Great to see you and Nellie this morning, Bruce. Let's keep in touch on the substantive issues. Glenn is happy to speak with you on this if it would help." So this is what I mean. Glenn, Nellie, Chris,
Bruce, they're all best friends. They're meeting in Washington, D.C. They had their meeting the day before the Russian investigation starts. And Christopher Steele says, and oh, by the way, Glenn's happy to talk to you guys as well. I mean, Glenn Simpson, being paid by the Clinton campaign, is talking to Bruce Orr, feeding information to him that they're then going to use to get this secret warrant to spy on the Trump campaign.
Unbelievable.
That is as wrong as it gets.
How corrupt. When do these people ever go to jail is the question. John, what else are we going to learn in your article before Hannity tonight?
Yeah, I really think that the congressman, Congressman Jordan, Congressman Meadows, Senator Grassley fought for a long time. There's a document that came out Friday that a lot of people haven't embraced the significance of. One, the FBI fired Steele on November 1st for leaking to the media and violating his confidential source rules. They wrote this sentence: the agent has advised the source, meaning Steele, he was not to operate to obtain any intelligence whatsoever on behalf of the FBI. On November 1st, the FBI said, we will no longer rely on Christopher Steele. 2 days, 3 days later, Bruce Orr begins to feed the information back to the FBI through a conduit. The FBI knew exactly what it was doing. And there's this great text message where Steele's afraid that Orr's about to be fired by Trump, just like Sally Yates. And he writes and says, just want to check you're okay, still in the situ, able to help locally as discussed along with your bureau colleagues. He wants to make sure that if Orr gets fired, he can still backdoor his corrupt intelligence, his false, unproven allegations to the FBI. It's extraordinary that the FBI allowed this to go on. It violates their own rules.
It violates their rules. FISA abuse galore. The corruption and incestuous relationships are just beyond the pale. And where this ends, it's not going to end well for a lot of people, I don't think. I've never seen such an abuse of power, corruption, an attempt to rig an an election in American history like this. It's just beyond the pale. All right. We'll see you both on. We'll see Mark Meadows and John Solomon on Hannity tonight. It'll be our lead story, I'm sure. 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. Thank you both for being with us. 800-941-SHAWN. We got a lot of your calls coming up. And Greg Jarrett, David Schoen, and much more straight ahead.
Telling us,
I'm trying to answer your question.
Okay,
I politely waited, and I even called on you despite the fact that you interrupted me while calling on your colleague.
Well,
I said it's ironic.
Which is why I interrupted.
I'm trying.
But if you finish, if you would not mind letting me have a follow-up, that would be fine. But
it's ironic, Jim, that not only you and the media attack the president for his rhetoric when they frequently lower the level of conversation in this country. Repeatedly, the media resorts to personal attacks without any content other than to incite anger. The media has attacked me personally on a number of occasions, including your own network, said I should be harassed as a life sentence, that I should be choked. ICE officials are not welcomed in their place of worship, and personal information is shared on the internet. When I was hosted by the Correspondents Association, of which almost all of you are members of, you brought a comedian up to attack my appearance and call me a traitor to my own gender. In fact, as I know, I'm the first press secretary in the history of the United States that's required Secret Service protection. The media continues to ratchet up the verbal assault against the president and everyone in this administration. And certainly we have a role to play, but the media has a role to play for the discourse in this country as well.
Three huge guys came up and started probably an inch from my face, screaming at me every word in the book, cursing as loud as they could.
Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen is in a Mexican restaurant of all places. Shame on you!
Shame!
All right, that, of course, is Jim Acosta with Sarah Sanders. And the president was very clear. He said fake news after Ivanka Trump's comments. But then you hear Pam Bondi and Sarah Sanders and Secretary Nielsen. And then yesterday, they were just eating in a restaurant. You have Charlie Kirk and Candace Owens, and not only that, it became physical, and they're throwing eggs and water and everything else in between that. How do you know if it's acid or water? How do you know what these people have? You don't know. That is an assault by any definition. And you know, listening to and I was the first to say, I'll stand up for anybody in the press if anyone lays a hand on them. But it's very different. But pointing out that you've been lying to the American people about so many different issues, and you literally got caught red-handed this weekend. This is a blockbuster. No, it wasn't a blockbuster. It was something the president had said on a couple of occasions as it related to the, you know, meeting at Trump Tower. Then, of course, we do have real collusion on tape, and that would be with Shiftless Schiff. Adam Schiff, probably the biggest liar in the country. And there he is on a phone with somebody he believes to be a Russian offering dirt on Donald Trump. And he was eating it all up, thinking he's going to get naked pictures of Trump and that Putin saw them and that he's compromised. Turned out to be a radio host and, you know, guy playing a bit on poor Adam Schiff. And it goes on from there. And then, of course, we have the whole collusion, and that is the funneled money of Hillary and the DNC through Perkins Coie, a law firm, through Fusion GPS, you know, straight on to a foreign national who uses phony Russian sources. And he, under oath in Great Britain, even admits it's raw intelligence, 50-50 maybe, turns out to be debunked. And that becomes not only the information that's disseminated as gospel truth before the election so that they can manipulate, misinform, and propagandize you, the American people. Then we find out it's even worse than that. And they were using it to spy on the Trump campaign and getting FISA warrants using that phony, fraudulent, bought and paid for Hillary Russian lie document, you know, to get warrants to spy on the American people, not once, but four times. And then we're learning, you know, from, you know, the reporting of John Solomon and Jim Jordan, that, and we'll know more by 9 o'clock tonight. Now, Bruce Orr's up to his, you know, eyeballs in all of this with his wife, Nellie, and even going into 2017, you know, saying that he wants to, they hates Trump and wants to take him out like Strzok and Page. It's unbelievable. Anyway, you want to know somebody that's been a victim of real violence? I said at the time, I'll say it again. Apparently, this guy that shot up Steve Scalise and others on that ball field, you know, a little over a year ago, and Steve Scalise still struggling physically, has had multiple surgeries. Well, he was a Bernie Sanders supporter, but I'm not holding Bernie Sanders responsible for the fact that some nut that supports him was involved in an act of violence. Anyway, the House Majority Whip, Steve Scalise, is with us. First of all, how are you doing physically? I had a chance to see you recently, and, you know, it looks you're doing well, but you're still struggling.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. It's great to be back with you. And I still do a few days a week of physical therapy. You know, I've learned how to walk again and trying to get your full balance and all that again, but still don't have use of my left foot. And so, you know, I have a brace on my foot and walk with crutches, but trying to get to where I don't have to use crutches anymore, just not yet there. So still working at it, but look, I mean, God's been good to me,
I got to be honest. I think it was the first play of the game 1 year after the last game that you had been practicing for the game the previous year is hit right to you. You know, literally, you make the best play I think I've ever seen in baseball, you know, from a non-professional. And you got that guy out. That had to be a great feeling for you.
It was unbelievable. I mean, a Hollywood moment, something you really can't even draw up because it doesn't seem real. But literally the very first pitch of the game, the ball, Raul Ruiz, Democrat from California, he hits the ball right to second base, and he's a right-hander. So I'm thinking, you know, there's nothing coming my way. And it comes right at me a little bit to the right. I have to go down on one knee and backhand the ball. Luckily, I got the ball, and then I'm on my knee, and I'm saying, okay, now I better make this throw. And I was able to make the throw and throw him out, and what a moment. Everybody came over and gave me a hug. Even Raul Ruiz came over, to his credit, and we were hugging and kind of just everybody was releasing all the emotions from the last year and everything that was involved in the shooting. So,
well, number one, we're glad you're healthy. We're glad you're recovering. How many surgeries did you ultimately have?
Total of nine surgeries, and they put me all back together, and thank goodness they, you know, the doctors were great, and they knew what they were doing. They had a lot of work to do, but they did a great job.
I knew at the time it was far more touch and go than the public had known. I don't know if you want to reveal that, but how many transfusions the day you got shot did you have within that 24-hour period?
I went through 20 units of blood, and they say the human body holds about nine. So, I had a lot of internal damage from the bullet breaking into over 100 pieces, and it ripped a lot of arteries and organs. And so it did some real damage, and the doctors had probably about a 12-hour period where they weren't sure if I was going to make it or not. But thank God you did.
I think one of the most courageous moments I've ever seen in law enforcement, and I've been trained, I'm more of a pistol shooter. I'm not a big rifle guy. And as much as I've been, I was trained in, my mom was a prison guard. She had a gun on her bedside every day, loaded. I mean, a very different time growing up then. But at a very young age, they made a decision. My parents, and because my mom worked in a prison, my dad was a family court probation guy, that they wanted me, especially because I was the biggest worry to them and in the most trouble. I had sisters, so they weren't as big a worry. But I think it was like 10 or 11 years old, they made sure that I became pretty proficient in the safety and use of a firearm. And they brought me to a range, and I sat there, and I learned about gun safety. And after the first lesson, the guy said, now, if you come back next week and you remember everything I said, I'll let you shoot it. It was the worst moment of my life because I thought, all right, now I'm ready to shoot my gun for the first time. But a pistol going up against a rifle like you were shot with, it's probably you just can't win. And we watched these brave Capitol Hill police officers that were there with you because you're in leadership literally walk in the middle of a ball field. They were open targets. They were never going to win that battle. And they did it anyway. Yeah. I mean, that is almost certain death, what they said. They did it anyway. I saw that, and I said, these are the most amazing people.
Yeah, you want to see real heroes. David Bailey and Crystal Griner on that Capitol Police detail, they literally, they were being shot at by the shooter. Both of them actually got hit in the shootout and still kept going at him with their handguns, and he's got a semi-automatic rifle with a handgun as well, and unlimited ammunition, .762 caliber, which is, you could take a bear down with that, is what the shooter had, and they've got handguns, and yet they kept going at him and ultimately brought him down with the help of Virginia police. And I've always praised law enforcement before this shooting, Sean, and I have tremendous respect for the men and women who protect us, not only abroad, our men and women in uniform, but our law enforcement at home. And I was saved by the heroism of David Bailey and Crystal Griner and the other police officers there, as well as just like divine intervention from God and real heroism from some of my colleagues like Brad Winstrup and others who came to make sure that they could make sure I got to the hospital in one piece so that the doctors could put me back together.
What do you think of all of this rhetoric and all of these incidents and all of this discussion about, you know, getting in people's faces and confronting, you know, Pam Bondi and Secretary Nielsen, poor Sarah Sanders, and even the children of the president, and then the press is upset that they're called out, I think, for horrendous, you know, irresponsible and reckless reporting on their part that has mostly been proven wrong.
Yeah, Sean, there's no place for it. There's absolutely no place for it. It's unacceptable, the rhetoric where you have, including some elected officials, encouraging people to go and harass members of the administration, the president's family. It's inexcusable. Members of Congress, they're, you know, obviously what happened to me, but it continues. And, you know, everybody's got a role to play in rising into a new, a higher level of discourse. We've got to stop the personal attacks. The press needs to be aware of their role as well. They, you know, it's almost like just because a lot of them don't like Donald Trump,
like 98% of them.
And it's a shame because, look, the press has an important role to play, but just because they don't like the president doesn't mean they can just encourage this kind of behavior because it's this president. They wouldn't do it if it was Barack Obama. They wouldn't even do it if it was George Bush. So they shouldn't do it because it's Donald Trump. Everybody needs to rise to a higher level and recognize that some of this rhetoric is fueling people to do things that are illegal and harmful, and trying to harass and hurt other people. That's not, we settle our differences at the ballot box, Sean. That's what makes America so great.
Well, you would think so, but the
people that we disagree with.
But there's been such an effort to undermine this president at a level we've never seen before, from the, you know, highest levels in the Justice Department and the FBI and all over the place.
And Sean, and I know you recognize this, but to President Trump's credit, he's undaunted by it. He doesn't let all of this madness and in some cases illegal activity, he doesn't let him get him down. I mean, he continues to pursue his conservative agenda that he ran on, getting the economy back on track, fighting for the forgotten men and women of this country. And it's working. And that's why people love him. That's why you see his numbers continue to go up, because the president is fighting for the people who had been left behind for too long. And now we're seeing the economy moving again. We need to keep this progress going. We need to make sure we house in these midterm elections.
You know, I know you know that I've supported Jim Jordan, and I happen to like you a lot personally and think you're one of the more conservative people in leadership. But this is, you know, here's my position. I feel leadership has left people like the Freedom Caucus on the sidelines. They write bills behind closed doors. And I think that unless you're going to bring the conservative part of the Republican caucus into the process, it's just unfair. Am I wrong in my criticism?
I would disagree. And if you just look at the
you mean you're saying the health care bill. Who saw the health care bill before you unloaded it on the Congress? Nobody.
It was, look, that bill spent months after it was filed publicly being worked on with more and more of our members that had different ideas, better ideas. Some weren't maybe better, but at least we worked with everybody. But on the tax cut bill, we literally had 2 months of member briefings where Kevin Brady, the chairman of the committee, met with every group within our conference. He surely met with the Freedom Caucus, the Tuesday group, RSC.
The House has been a lot better than the Senate. I'm not going to disagree. Listen, I want you in leadership. I do. But I also want somebody like Meadows or Jordan in there also. And I don't have anything against Kevin McCarthy. He thinks I do, but I don't, you know, but.
No, Kevin, look, Kevin's doing a good job. And if you look at what we've been doing, we've been working with Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan, of course, on a lot of these items. We work with other members, too. They don't get as much attention. But if you look at like Mark Walker, the chairman of the RSC, and some of the leaders of the Tuesday group like Katko and Elise Stefanik, Rodney Davis, you know, we meet right. with a lot of different groups within our conference to put bills together, but we've passed some of these bills. And you go back to health care. You mentioned this.
Well, I've got to run, but the Senate never follows up.
They fall short. Back at that, Sean, next year.
I know.
We've got to get. I think we'll get more Republican senators. You've been promoting some of these.
Well, I hope you fund the wall before the election. I think it would be good politics, and it keeps a big promise. And we'll have you back to talk about that. All right, Steve Scalise, 800-941 Sean, toll free telephone number. When we come back, we'll check in with our friend Greg Jarrett and also David Schoen. All right, news roundup, information overload hour. Let me play Devin Nunes from last night, and this goes back to the story that is now emerging and breaking about Bruce Orr and his deep, deep involvement, much more than anybody ever thought, as we talk with Jim Jordan and also John Solomon, and also how the FBI failed to include exculpatory evidence in the Carter Page pieces. What is going on here? And then, of course, we have, so much more to discuss. Let me play this quick, and then we bring in our guest, News Roundup Information Overload.
Senator Grassley, secondly, asked for the Bruce Orr 302s. Bruce Orr is going to become more and more important in this investigation.
Explain a 302 and were they altered? Explain a 302, which is an official report. Were they altered?
So the FBI interviewed Bruce Orr at least a dozen times and put together reports. So once they fired Steele, which at that point they should have not been meeting with him anymore, but what they had is they had Bruce Orr, whose wife Nellie Orr was working for Fusion GPS, was going to meet and still get the information from Christopher Steele as they were trying to verify this unverified dossier or the Clinton dirt that was used to get the FISA warrant. There is exculpatory evidence that we have seen of classified document that need to be declassified. These were not, when I say exculpatory
in nature, in what way? I don't mean to press you. Exculpatory in what way?
In that the Carter Page FISA, when those, the judges should have been presented with this exculpatory evidence that the FBI and DOJ had.
And she got compromising materials on Trump after their short relations.
Okay. And what's the nature of the compromise?
Well, there were pictures of naked Trump.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so Putin was made aware of the availability of the compromising material?
Yes, of course. Buzova shared those materials with Sobchak, and Sobchak shares those materials with Putin because she's a goddaughter of Putin, and Putin decided to press on Trump.
And the materials that you can provide to the committee or to the FBI, would they corroborate this allegation?
Sure, of course. When they were in Ukraine, we got their conversation by the phone where they discussed those compromising materials. We are ready to provide it to FBI.
So you have recordings of both Sovchek and Buseva where they're discussing the compromising material on Mr. Trump?
Absolutely.
And then, of course, we've got Adam Schiff, Schiffless Schiff, and you want to talk about real collusion. We've got it on tape. Oh, he was panting. He was listening so closely and happy that a Russian was going to give him dirt on Trump. Listen. And, of course, Hillary paid for, you know, on top of that, paid for all of the Russian propaganda. With us now, Greg Jarrett. The number one book on the New York Times list now, The Russian Hoax, The Illicit Scheme to Clear Hillary Clinton, Frame Donald Trump. David Schoen, civil liberties attorney and criminal rights attorney. Let me start with you, Greg. Devin Nunes, and now this emerging report and these messages back and forth that we're learning about as it relates to Bruce Orr and his involvement in all of this. It's far deeper than anybody ever suspected. And all these meetings that took place and Christopher Steele sticking around into 2017 with Bruce Orr. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And they wanting to get in touch and still feed, even though he's a liar, a leaker, and debunked, they still using this guy to feed Mueller information.
It's really quite astonishing, Sean. Christopher Steele kept feeding the FBI allegations about Donald Trump even after Steele was fired and after Trump won the election. Now, why was this done? Well, it seems apparent to me to destroy Trump and undo the election. And at the same time, they were trying to, after the fact, verify their previous use of the anti-Trump dossier, which they submitted to a FISA court for a wiretap warrant without it being verified in violation of FBI rules. And it was also a violation of FBI rules to continue to use a source who has been fired and discredited. But the agents were very clever under James Comey. They decided, well, we won't meet directly with Christopher Steele anymore. We'll use a conduit, Bruce Orr, the number four guy at the Department of Justice, to act as an intermediary, to pass along information to us. And, of course, Bruce Orr's wife assisted in the composition of the dossier. So this is corruption defined.
What is your reaction to this, David Schoen? And I guess the question I'll ask you is, you've defended so many people over the years. When do any of these people get indicted? When are their trials? I mean, everybody, the trial of the century is not Paul Manafort. You know, and this trial, you know, their star witness admitting to embezzlement, committing fraud and crimes and bank fraud and money laundering and avoiding taxes. So he's a great witness on, you know, for the prosecution here. He gets out of jail free, get out of jail free card. I'd say anything you want if you're keeping me out of jail.
Well, that's 100% right, especially so in these white-collar cases. These folks will say anything they're told to say in order to avoid a day in jail. But your real question is, you know, when do the cards turn, in a sense, and when do we see these other people facing the music? And it's a real great question. I mean, now the Justice Department ought to be in the hands of Mr. Sessions. It doesn't appear to be. You have exposed on this show some of the greatest scandals, most offensive scandals we have ever seen. We don't even hear about them other places. And you're not making anything up. You're playing tapes. You're using transcripts. This is all out there. I don't see the media covering. Has the media covered that Schiff phone call that you've played? That's terrific stuff. Look, the Hillary Clinton business, you know, you've documented over and over again. I don't know. I mean, Mr. Sessions needs to resurface at some point. And as I've said many times, I believe Rod Rosenstein not only has given too broad a mandate to Mr. Mueller, but is an obstacle to having charges brought against his colleagues and friends.
All right. I want to ask you both, and we had a long discussion, the three of us, last week. We were talking about Sammy the Bull Gravano, and I know this is not the same, and I'm looking at these updates, and some of them, frankly, are humorous, and some of them are downright frightening. This Judge Ellis in this case lashing out again at the lead prosecutor. If jurors defer to the judge, they may view the prosecution as being out of line and overly aggressive, and the prosecution complaining that Ellis is putting a straitjacket on their case. They're nervous. The judge is furious, and I just want to go to the Politico. Because for days, the judge has been, you know, literally saying, you know, holding these guys to a certain standard. You're not going to make this about that he's rich. You're not going to make it. You're not going to throw words like oligarch around. You know, literally, the judge started mocking. I mean, I've never seen anything like this in my life. And I think rightly so, bringing to tears Mueller's prosecutors for a fourth day in a row. But as this went forward, you know, the prosecutor's frustrations, you know, came out in a series of clashes. And, you know, let's get to the heart of the matter, the judge says. Judge, we've been at the heart. This is Mueller's guy, the local guy, Andrews, saying that before the judge cut him off, he says, listen to me. Don't speak while I'm speaking, said sharply. He added that he didn't see how the testimony on travel amounts to a hill of beans with regards to the charges against Manafort. And literally these clashes, and I was reading this in the Politico today, you know, if, you know, some of them taking place with the jury in the room, if the jurors are watching this judge and 95% of federal cases end up in a guilty verdict, I've got to believe there's a shot here for Manafort. What are your thoughts, Greg?
I think there is a shot because whenever your main witness is a guy who's been essentially bribed by prosecutor leniency in exchange for him saying what prosecutors want him to say, I've always felt like, you know, that's bribery. It's suborning perjury in too many cases. So, you know, these jurors will have to figure out, do we believe Rick Gates, who's an admitted liar and embezzler, who has every reason in the world to be lying now, or do we believe the accused who is presumed innocent, who says, you know, he relied on Gates for all of these financial transactions that are at the heart of the prosecution's case? So that's what it's going to come down to in the end.
You know, I use the term to you both. I mean, if in the case of this Manafort case and his partner, Rick Gates, and if the prosecution says, well, we're going to get you a get-out-of-jail-free card, but you got to testify against your partner. Now, I'm not sure who did what, when, and where. Well, I didn't even know these people in 2005, and they worked maybe like 100 days for the president, you know, then candidate Trump. But my question is, if you're going to say to one guy, if you say everything that we need you to say about that guy, we're going to give you a get-out-of-jail-free card. Aren't they ostensibly paying, bribing this guy? And I know prosecutors hate when I say this, but you're offering something in exchange for something. You're offering a guy a get-out-of-jail-free card if you just say what we need you to say. And to me, there's something fundamentally wrong with that system.
Absolutely right. You're offering a person in the position of these witnesses something they simply don't have the intestinal fortitude to say no to. They will say anything about anyone if it gets them out of jail free. Remember, reportedly, Manafort has met over 20 times with these prosecutors. This is a prosecutorial team talking about Weissman and Andres, who have a track record of this kind of thing. Weissman, with witness after witness, was said and written letters, etc., that he's told them how to testify or had agents tell them what he needs them to testify to, regardless of whether or not it's the truth, and maybe even preferably if it's not the truth. So, listen, it's very important to remember that Greg Andres is Mueller's guy. Greg Andres is in the same camp as a Weissman. They built their careers in the Eastern District of New York. They're sort of spoiled brat prosecutors. Weissman, I told you, is known as the pathological liar in the Eastern District. But the key was they were used to having their way with virtually every judge there, with the exception of two judges in the Eastern District. Most came out of this office or they were intimidated by them. Greg Andres has a number of cases assigned to Judge Garifas, a very anti-Trump judge, by the way, in the Eastern District, and he would get away with whatever he wanted to get away with. And then they concocted this story that sometimes was reported in the paper that purportedly a mafioso put out a hit on the two of them, Garifas, Judge Garifas, and Greg Andres. Completely concocted story, and they knew it. It was a list that the man gave to a correctional officer to have him put a spell on the Santorina religion. But they lived off of this thing, the so-called murder plot.
Yeah.
Greg Andres is used to having his way, and Judge Ellis isn't having of that.
We got to take a break. We'll come back. We'll have more with Greg Jarrett and David Schoen on the other side. All right, as we continue, Greg Jarrett has the number one book now on the New York Times bestseller list. It's called The Russian Hoax, The Illicit Scheme to Clear Hillary Clinton, Frame Donald Trump. David Schoen, civil liberties and criminal defense attorney. I want to give you the same question that David just answered in the last segment, Greg, and it's really simple. I have a real problem with Gates, who admits to being an embezzler, you know, stealing, a guy that admits that he's up to basically doing the same thing that Manafort is going to, they want Manafort in jail for, but he gets the get out of jail free card and he gets something. I don't know. Are you paying for the testimony? Are you bribing? I mean, what's the right word? Why do I look at that and I say there's something corrupt about this?
Well, this is why cross-examination of Rick Gates will be critical to the defense of Paul Manafort. Cross-examination, especially of a witness like this, is often referred to as the engine of truth. The defense attorneys will explore in detail what Gates is getting out of this. And they'll try to set the jury straight that this is a guy who's lied before. He admits that he's lied. He admits that he embezzled money from his partner, the defendant, and you cannot believe a word he is saying. There's a reason the word
Why
snitch.
Did the All right, got the word snitch. Why would the jury ever believe him? I know there's money. I know there's a money trail. I know that they're trying to make the case for the money trail. I don't know what Manafort or Gates ever did.
If the documents presented by the prosecution corroborate generally the story that Rick Gates is telling, then perhaps prosecutors will be able to make their case beyond a reasonable doubt. But that is an incredibly high standard. And to me, a snitch, and that's a pejorative, invidious term, speaks volumes about the trustworthiness and credibility of a witness like that. That, in my mind, equals reasonable doubt.
I agree. But is it reasonable doubt, or is the money going to ultimately decide? And what is the jury going to think about, oh, your star witness did at least a big part of this, and this guy gets off scot-free, but we're supposed to convict the other guy?
Right. Look, remember also, this is why the government wants to put in that evidence of wealth and high living lifestyle by Manafort. Judge Ellis has said, you know, cut it out. They know the jurors, by and large, resent people who spend that kind of money and live those kind of lifestyles. But keep your eye on this. Emails rule. You know, they tried to tell you all along here that the Strzok and the Page emails mean this. They might mean that. They're not so important. Today is all about emails in the Manafort trial. That's what they're trying to use to corroborate Gates. And the government gets to tell the jury through a witness what those emails should be read to mean, how they should be interpreted. That's why the Strzok and the Page emails and the emails now that you talked about in the first part of this segment that are starting to come down about Bruce Orr, etc. People write emails and still forget that one day someone may see those emails. The Comey email, all of these.
Now, all of this. Listen, we've got big breaking news tonight, 9 Eastern on Fox. You guys have been amazing. Greg Jarrett, congrats. David Schoen, always great to have you. 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number. We'll take a quick break here. We'll come back, wide open phones, final half hour. Sean Hannity show is straight ahead.
Oddly influential with a guy who wants to kill us.
And to our detractors that insist that this march will never add up to anything, you. But this is the hallmark of revolution. Yes, I'm angry. Yes, I am outraged. Yes, I have thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House.
You know, I had a dream the other night about that I was playing golf with Donald Trump, and I was standing beside him with a club in my hand, and I was, you know, considering my options when I suddenly woke up. You know, it was one of those dreams where you want to just get back to sleep so you can finish it. You know?
Put Mr. Burgess up against Sean Hannity. He'll tear him up. I need you to go out and talk to your friends and talk to your neighbors. I want you to talk to them whether they're independent or whether they are Republican. I want you to argue with them and get in their face. And
press always asks me, don't I wish I were debating him? No, I wish you were in high school. I could take him behind the gym. That's what I wish.
What we've got to do is fight in Congress, fight in the courts, fight in the streets.
Ordinary people who simply saw what needed to be done and came together and supported those ideals who have made the difference. They've marched. They've bled. Yes, some of them have died. This is hard. Every good thing is. We have done this before. We can do this again.
As far as I'm concerned, the Tea Party can go straight to hell.
In fact, the only thing your mouth is good for is being Vladimir Putin's holster.
Oh, Ivanka's going to be our saving grace. You know, when he's about to nuke Finland or something, she's going to walk into the bedroom and, you know,
yeah,
daddy, don't do it, daddy. Yeah.
He's a punk. He's a dog. He's a pig. He's a con, a bullshit artist, a mutt. He's an idiot. He talks how he wants to punch people in the face. Well, I'd like to punch him in the face.
We are graced with Sarah's presence tonight. I have to say, I'm a little starstruck. I love you as Aunt Lydia in The Handmaid's Tale.
Hey, that. Racist ass.
Why are you even out here? Get that bitch out of here.
Trump. It's no longer down with Trump, it's Trump.
Already, you have members of your cabinet that are being booed out of restaurants. Yeah. Who have protesters taking up at their house. Yeah. Who's saying no peace, no sleep. No peace, no sleep. And guess what? We're going to win this battle because while you try and quote the Bible, Jeff Sessions and others, you really don't know the Bible. God is on our side. And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome anymore, anywhere.
1, 2, 3! The bourgeoisie! 4, 5, 6! The bourgeoisie!
All right, there is your unhinged left. Now, you notice the media gets upset when they just chant, oh, you guys suck, or you guys are awful. And I mean what I said. I mean, I am totally in favor of freedom of speech, but I am against any type of violence. Now, we had Candace Owens and Charlie Kirk on Hannity last night on the TV show. You saw what happened to them. They were eating in a restaurant. Just like Secretary Nielsen was eating in a restaurant, just like Pam Bondi and Sarah Sanders and her family, young kids trying to eat in a restaurant. You've heard what they've said about Melania, about Ivanka, about the children, even their granddaughter. It just never ends. The amount of vitriol, hatred, mean-spiritedness of the left, it is on display every day. And the media, they never cover the good economy. They're never going to cover the good economy. They never followed the failed record of Barack Obama. They were never going to tell you that story. They were never going to vet Barack Obama. And this is now coming down to what? We're now 91 days away from Election Day. 91 days to go. And I know there's this big race in Ohio, and I know that, you know, this is John Kasich's. By the way, whose brilliant idea was it to use John Kasich? I know it was his old district, as he's not loved in Ohio anymore because he basically sounds like a liberal Democrat every day. I have no idea. Used to be a friend of mine. Doesn't want anything to do with me. Won't even take my call. Anyway, Troy Balderson for Congress, if you happen to be in this district today and you're in Ohio and you're listening, it's around Columbus, and you're listening to this program, I think the polls close at 7:30. And let me tell you, there's a lot at stake. Every seat now matters. Every vote matters. And this is certainly a winnable race. The president went in on, what, Saturday night and for him, and the polls had tightened up to, I think he was down one where he'd been up 10. And you never know in an election, you never know in a special election, you never know in an off-year election. You just don't know. But I hope the great people of Ohio will get out and vote for this guy because, you know what? If the Democrats get a hold of the House, we know what they're going to do. It's going to be investigation, investigation, hearings, investigation, try and impeach Trump if they can. We know they want their crumbs back. They don't want you to keep your tax cut money. They think it's theirs. It's crumbs, but they want it back. If it was just crumbs, why would they want the crumbs? And they want to keep Obamacare. You know, how did that work out for you and your family, keeping your doctor, keeping your plan, and saving money? How did that work out for you? And they want to get rid of ICE. They want open borders. They want the investigations into the deep state. We just literally broke open how big Bruce Orr is in all of this. And so I just hope a lot of people will go out and vote. All right, 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. Let me just get to our phones. Let me say hi to Amy is in Louisiana. Amy, hi, how are you? Glad you called.
Thank you. I was just going to call and say that, you know, women do love Trump and mothers love Trump. I was very concerned with my two sons' future with Hillary Clinton and, you know, the way that I could see men will be punished in the future. And it's very frustrating that people will say that, you know, my husband must have told me who to vote for. Like, I can't think for myself. I make my own decisions. And I pray that these people in the special elections vote for the Republicans, because I do feel it's going so well, and I would hate for it to be undone.
That's what it's all about. It's all about being undone. This is, you know, you know what they want to do. And, you know, Rush put it very succinctly. We actually played a clip of him last night on TV, and he's saying it a little differently than I'm saying it, but it's he's right. I mean, if you bring it down to its brass tacks, you know, what he's saying is that it's all about hatred. It's not about a vision for America. Remember, 2016 was about, oh, my gosh, we got 13 more million Americans on food stamps, 8 million more in poverty, and the lowest labor participation rate. Now we have the highest labor participation rate, but that was since the 70s and the worst recovery since the 40s and home ownership rate at a 51-year low and literally accumulating more debt than every other president before him combined. It bothers me that Americans' memories are so short. It also bothers me there has been an unrelenting attack. They have not stopped attacking this president since the day he came down the escalator with Melania Trump. And now the efforts that we have discovered of people that have tried everything at the highest levels of power to destroy this man and his family and undo an election, if that doesn't motivate us, I don't know what will. And that's a big problem. So I'll give you the last word.
I feel like this is the first time in my life that things have actually got done. I mean, everything he has said, he has delivered. And I feel like every attack against him is an attack against me, because I feel the same way as he does. And what he is for is what we voted for. And so I don't know that they don't realize that when they attack him, they attack me and my family, because I take it personal.
You know, you should take it personal. Remember, the media thinks we're dumb. The media thinks we made a mistake. The media thinks this was a fluke, because they can't accept that they lost. And they lost for a reason. They lost because their governing hurt the American people. They lost because they deserve to lose. And so now they want to undo it. This is their do-over. This is their attempt. We're going to fix this. We'll take back the Congress, which, by the way, it's something that happens. But we know what they want to do if they get a hold of the Congress. Anyway, appreciate the call, Amy. Thank you. Back to our busy telephones. Kathy is in Minnesota. In a way, a state that Donald Trump came very close to winning. How are you, Kathy?
Oh, hi, Sean. It's really wonderful to talk to you. Yeah, Trump should really come here, because he almost won Minnesota. And I used to be a Bernie girl, really supported him, but I couldn't even vote for Democrats in that election that year. So this year.
By the way, how do you feel as a Bernie Sanders supporter? Nobody ever talks about this. Hillary robbed the primary, rigged it, robbed it, and basically screwed over every Bernie Sanders supporter.
Oh, yes. I want my donations back.
I don't blame you.
I really.
You deserve it.
Really sad. Very, really sad, you know, and something hopefully will get done about that. But no, I'm done with that. I'm completely done with that party, and I will be first time ever voting Republican in the primary this next week.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm glad. Listen, it's important, Kathy. It's very important.
Oh, I know. I know. I like what's going on with the country. I like, you know, that he's strong on the military and the police, and it's really great to see. And
look at what the New York Times hires. F the police, not once, numerous times. You know, racial comments, the way this woman, Mrs. Zhang, I mean, I can't believe the comments she made, and they hired her.
Oh, yeah. No, they're trying to have a race war and get people who, you know, support Trump not to support him thinking he's a racist. So it's just a game they're playing. But I don't think they're going to win it. And I do think people need to go into the inner cities and talk about how the Democrats have just ruined all these cities. You know, there needs to be more people going to those cities just explaining the policies. I used to live in Chicago. It's a great city, but I'm glad I'm in Minnesota right now.
Yeah, well, listen, I understand. Look, the whole good news about everything is we can really save the country. You know, America has the resources. They're just energy alone, and we're talking about, you know, millions of high-paying career jobs in states that need them and a revitalization of states that have been neglected, where, you know, we were told jobs are never coming back, that we'd never have manufacturing in America again, et cetera, that we can't compete, that Americans don't want to do these jobs. I'm sick of hearing all of it, because that's not the America that I know. And to see millions of Americans now off of food stamps, millions of Americans now in the workforce, millions of Americans now prospering, opportunities that we haven't had in over a decade emerging, I mean, it's a pretty exciting time. You know, as Reagan once said in his reelection, you know, stay the course. Let's not go backwards here. And that's what the next 91 days are about. Don't go backwards. Anyway, Kathy, God bless you. Glad you called.
All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. One of the bizarre happenings in the courtroom in the Manafort case today is, wouldn't you have faced up to 290 years in jail? Oh, that's right. Mueller gave him a get-out-of-jail-free card. We got that and breaking news. Bruce Orr up to his eyeballs. We'll explain all of this tonight on Hannity. Greg Jarrett, Mark Meadows, John Solomon, Jeanine Pirro, Jay Sekulow weighs in. What's the future of the Mueller investigation and much more? 9 Eastern, Hannity, Fox. We'll see you tonight at 9, back here tomorrow.